This is Game Theory, a podcast about competition, strategy, and decision-making, hosted by me, Nick Andrews, and my brother, Chris. In this episode, we keep conspiracies alive. The moon landing, the JFK assassination, the Denver International Airport, some of the most widely spread and discussed conspiracy theories. It feels like we've all heard about them, but why? How can conspiracy theories and ideas like these last as long as they have? Well, one explanation is simple. It's that they're all true. But even if we ignore that, or even if we could debunk a conspiracy theory factually, they somehow live on. Academics and researchers have been looking into this and why it happens. On one hand, there are a number of societal stressors that seem to breed conspiracy theories and hoaxes. While on the other hand, there seems to be a mathematical way to predict and analyze conspiracy theories, factually. Still, what do we gain as a society or as an individual by believing in these grand-scale theories? Why is it dangerous? What if it's just true? What are some of your favorites? And what are some of your favorites? And welcome. I'm jovial tonight. Welcome to episode 97 of Game Theory, a podcast about competition strategy and decision making. And I'm in a great mood. And Chris, I will tell you why, because there are two foods that I eat. When I eat them, I consistently feel as if the people at the restaurant put literal drugs in them. I feel a little high. And I can't explain it. Those two foods are crawfish. There's cocaine in that crawfish, and pho. And pho just makes me feel just a little high. Just I love pho.
Okay, where are you getting crawfish?
Honestly, if it comes in a grocery sack on a stand by the side of the road, preferably in a gas station, is usually where I get it.
So there's like one place that you go or have gone to get crawfish before, and you're like, yeah, this is the greatest culinary experience of my entire life.
Yes, correct.
And that and pho, have you ever had pho with crawfish in it?
No, I haven't.
And is crawfish are the same thing as crawdads, right?
I think so. I think they're just crustaceans.
Like regional.
Yeah, mini lobsters, I guess.
Yeah, that's one of those things that's like depending on where you live, you say it different. It's like people from Wisconsin call water fountain the bubbler.
Oh,
cheesy freaks.
That's a weird one. I'm not a huge fan of that. I'm not a huge fan of that. That's not a good.
I think that's one of the ones that's a truly unique thing. Like nobody else from really anywhere says that. And like everybody from Wisconsin refers to it as a bubbler.
There's a weird thing in Orange County that's like that. It's like when you, like if I had a bottle of water and you wanted a drink of it and you didn't want to put your mouth on it so you weren't to be rude. And you would like take a drink of it, but you wouldn't touch it to your mouth, right? You would just like let it fall in your mouth like a waterfall. And apparently in Orange County, they call it something else. Like a bird drink. Literally Google it. I'm sure people in California, if we have some Southern California listeners, like I'm sure that they're like, yeah, these people are nuts. They call it something dumb. I'm telling you.
Yeah, if there's anybody out there who's in and around the OC that knows of what we speak here, please let me know. Because that's... I don't know what else you would... I mean, the water that you're drinking is falling into your mouth. Like, where do birds come into this?
I guess, isn't that how they feed their young?
Well, yeah, like by barfing into their mouth. So, like, in this situation, the water bottle is like the mother bird and the drinker is like the hatchling bird being fed by vomit. Is that the situation? Is that what they're doing in Southern California?
I think so.
Oh, Lord, what are we doing? We need to shut down California until we figure out what's going on.
That would be really, I'm sure that they're also like, you know what, we could just take we don't want to break up with the United States. We could just take a little break, like a little hall pass and just pretend.
Yeah, we want to see other weird coastal places. Although I did recently attend a wedding in Southern California.
Sure.
Or actually Northern California near this little town called Half Moon Bay. I found out that there is a murder mystery that takes place there. It's called Half Moon Bay. It's the name of the book. But it's a lovely little seaside town. And I get now why people flock to California. It was super cool. Even like when it was crappy weather, it was really nice weather. You know, it was like a really pretty kind of rain, like the slate colored clouds were really, they're speaking to me.
There's a reason everyone's
they do some weird stuff out there.
There's a reason everyone's out there. That's all I'll say. There's a reason everyone's out there. And, I like it out there quite a bit. I mean, what can I say? It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. The weather's awesome. And San Diego used to be the cool place where nobody knew about it. And now that just simply isn't the case anymore. We just have to deal with the fact that San Diego, the secret's out, man. The secret is out and nobody wants that. Everybody wants San Diego to go back to the way that it was, but that's not how time works.
Yeah, it's a real shame. What's that old engineering joke or science joke, I guess? Entropy isn't what it used to be.
I don't understand that, but don't teach me because it's a science joke. Okay, so today we're talking about conspiracy theories and hoaxes and the lifespan, and it's sort of like fire. You need fuel, you need heat, you need bullshit. So we're going to be talking about that. I did want to address...
Oxygen is the other ingredient for those of you keeping track at home of the fire triangle. Heat, fuel, and oxygen.
Oxygen, air. That's basically the same thing. Air and oxygen.
You need intake. That's why you got to blow on your fire to start it.
So we're going to talk about the conspiracy theory triangle, and I don't know if it's actually a triangle. I'm trying to land this plane. There is pressurized situations in society, time, and then it makes people feel emotions, which is usually fear and boredom, which we will talk about. How long does it last, and which conspiracies are real conspiracies and things like that. We're going to get into all that. I did have a couple things before we get into that. December 11th. December 11th was apparently in America is the date at which most people break up of any one date on the calendar.
Really?
Yeah. People think it's like February 13th. Dude, I didn't want to buy him any stuff for Valentine's Day. No,
that's cliche.
No. So the theory behind the December 11th breakup date is that it's like the second weekend in December and you're starting to realize like, oh, this is a summer romance. It lasted a little while. Shit, I'm going to have to bring them home to my family and pay actually a ton of money to see them and stuff. Nah. And so shouts to anybody that's newly single out there and trying to get their nerd on. What's up?
Yeah, boring is hot. Just
boring is hot.
Get rid of your personality. Start doing really boring stuff. It worked for us. I think it's worked for us, actually.
My wife, just I wore her down. Just too tired.
Yeah, you just got to be really, really persistently boring, and I think that's the key to a woman's heart. It's also the key to a man's heart if you're interested in that sort of thing.
That's true. Actually, it's Christmas. It's Christmas buying season. Maybe we should put out a gift guide for nerds, like books and stuff that we like. Everybody knows to buy our friend Justin's book about The Price is Right, and of course
it's called Solving the Price is Right.
Solving the Price is Right. We also endorse Bowling Alone, but we've got some other ones. The Swerve was fun. The Swerve got the juices flowing. I told you it would get the juices flowing, and it did. I know it did.
If you're going to buy The Swerve, read The Swerve so you can hate The Swerve. Ah. It's not a good book. It's a bad book. It tells lies. It tells things dishonestly. It totally characterizes the Middle Ages. It's unfair, and you, as an aficionado of the Middle Ages, ought to know better. Greenberg was just... He was just talking smack. That's all he was doing.
Well, I don't know who... Mike Greenberg is a host on ESPN, but Green Blatt wrote this one.
Whatever.
If you want to get nerdy about it, I consider around the time that Poggio was doing his things, like too woke to even be the Middle Ages, but that's neither here nor there.
Too woke to even be the Middle
Ages? Once they started to care about their place in the world, I'm like, all right, the fun's over. We're getting annoying.
Once they started to care about their place in the world, they were interested in a completely different notion of social progress. They were interested in the perfection of the human condition vis-a-vis the religious experience and not in the advancement of society. Like, that was a completely different set of questions. That's a thoroughly modern invention after basically like 1895.
Chris.
Barzun will back me up on this.
I'm going to wait. Wilson will back me up on this. And speaking of Middle Ages and fun stuff, there's also, if we're talking about books, there's a new book series out that people are just, they can't shut up about. It's called The Fourth Wing, and apparently the sequel came out. This is apparently like How to Train Your Dragon, Harry Potter, Game of Thrones. Like those are the vibes. Dragons and Harry Potter. Dragon School.
So it's like Aragon if that had been done well.
There you go. I don't know. Everyone's reading it, so I want to read it too, I guess, just to be. I haven't been part of a book movement in like forever, so it might be. I did The Hunger Games. That was fun.
That is fun. I was talking about the Hunger Games earlier today. It's a good little story. You said the title of this one's called The Fourth Wing?
The Fourth Wing is the first one, and then the sequel, I don't know or care what it's called right now, because I'm going to screw it up and distract people. The Fourth Wing is the first one. It came out last year. It set TikTok on fire. I mean, people wouldn't shut up. And then the people who are like kind of like good at understanding literature were too scared to speak out about it, and that's how you know it's a movement. When the people are like, shut up about my favorite book, that's how you know it's a movement. Okay.
It really makes you wonder what happened to Wings 1 through 3.
Hey, read the book. It's in the book. I guess, what's going on? Okay, Chris, do you remember a while back when we pitched the idea of having an episode about Mandela effects? Mandela effects are when people just misremember things that just never happened or whatever. We have now discovered one of the most famous Mandela effects in American culture is a lie. And not only is it a lie, it breeds into what we're doing today. It is a conspiracy theory.
Are you about to break out the Berenstain Bears thing? Like, people have been photoshopping that all along?
No. Much, much more sinister. One of the biggest, and by sinister, I mean this is a fun conspiracy. There's nobody being murdered or anything.
By sinister, I mean not sinister.
The Fruit of the Loom. Cornucopia. It was considered to be one of the biggest Mandela effects ever.
What was the effect there?
That there was never a cornucopia. You were misremembering the whole time.
No, that's an obvious lie. There was a cornucopia. There was. For sure. They changed their logo in the 2000s.
They have removed all official evidence of the cornucopia, and people have been digging out old shit from their parents' closets to prove it. The Fruit of the Loom people are like, no, never. So they're playing into this. And that's just a good example of a conspiracy theory.
It's good.
That's fun for us to dive into hoaxes and BS. So that's what we're doing today. We're talking about favorite conspiracy theories. Another good one might be, and give you 3 seconds to turn your radio down for your kids, Christmas isn't real.
Yeah, there's no such thing as Christmas. There was never a December 25th. Your calendar is wrong. Yeah. It skips directly to Boxing Day.
It's a Mayan
myth. You know what? I have to apologize to all my American listeners out there. Boxing Day is not real either. I refuse to acknowledge it. I'm sorry I even said that phrase.
No, for those of us that gamble on sports, that's when
we have to fight.
Dude, that's when you gamble on soccer all day. They play soccer all day. You just gamble the whole day.
I can't imagine. You know, I'm glad there are people out there who want to live that kind of lifestyle. I don't get it.
All right, Chris. So we are talking about this PBS article, and this kind of was food for thought for us. We were like, what? What's happening here? And so the PBS article in question, you sent it to me. So you were kind of, I guess, this is your brainchild. So what did PBS write, and why was this fun for you?
We talk a lot on the show about different conspiracies. We have all kinds of examples. We have the Mandela effects. It's very fun to talk about that. But there are really people out there who believe this sort of thing. There's some of these are like, okay, well, yeah, that's a fun thing that people kind of made up. And I think most serious people would acknowledge, like, all right, this isn't really the truth of the way things are. There isn't really some big set of behind the scenes machinations at work by the powers that be to set up this or that different scenario. I think most people know conspiracy theories are generally nonsense.
Yeah.
But the question then becomes, okay, why are there hoaxes that seem to last the test of time? Or why are there hoaxes that get so much more breadth and reach and depth into the popular imagination? And what is it about those hoaxes that makes them that way, that gives them a little more lifespan? And so this PBS article was this really interesting piece from 2016. This is written by Joshua Barajas, and it was published in their science section. They were writing about this paper that came out that examines what pieces have to fall into place in order for a hoax to get propagated. And then the consequence of that, and the question that we're really interested in here today, is what is the lifespan of a successful hoax? How long does a genuine, no-kidding conspiracy that's made up, that's not real, how long does that actually survive? And the article by Joshua Barajas talks about this physicist out of Oxford University whose name is David Robert Grimes. He wrote a really interesting mathematical article that examines that exact question. It's called On the Viability of Conspiratorial Beliefs. He published it in January of 2016 on PLOS-1. And I'm just gonna draw some bits here from the abstract of that paper to kind of explain
yes.
what what he was looking at here. So he starts out by saying conspiratorial ideation is the tendency of individuals to believe that events and power relations are secretly manipulated by certain clandestine groups and organizations. So that's the main idea that he's looking at here, is that people believe that behind the scenes, people are pulling the strings and making things happen. So in effect, what Grimes did was kind of parameterize the anatomy of these conspiracy theories to figure out, okay, how is it that people can come up with these stories and what is it that makes them look for a long time? And so he explains that the model he develops is used to estimate the likelihood of claims from some commonly held conspiratorial beliefs. These are namely that the moon landings were faked, that climate change is a hoax, that vaccination is dangerous, and that a cure for cancer is being suppressed by vested interests. So in case, player three, in case you didn't know this, I feel like this one comes up every once in a while, but it's not like commonly name checked. Like the moon landing one is like the one that comes to people's lips immediately when you start talking conspiracy theories. But there's this conspiracy out there that like we've cured cancer and people know it and they know how to cure cancer and anybody could be cured of the cancer that ails them at a moment's notice, except that the pharmaceutical companies and the doctors and the insurance companies would lose a lot of money because they can charge a lot of money to patients to treat their cancer instead of just outright curing it. So they're withholding that technology on the basis that they make money. They profit off of the disease rather than the cure.
Sure.
So these commonly held conspiracy theories are the ones that Grimes used to kind of test his parameterization of conspiracy theories. And so the theory here, he said, he used the theory to run simulations of these claims that predict intrinsic failure would be imminent, even with the most generous estimates for how well people can keep secrets. And the results of the model suggest that large conspiracies, which are like huge kind of like moon landing scale conspiracy theories that would, in this case, involve at least 1,000 people knowing and keeping quiet about it. He says the model suggests that large conspiracies quickly become untenable and prone to failure. And so the hope is that with this model, we get a clearer understanding of just how many pieces have to fall into place, which is to say how many people have to keep big conspiracies quiet in order for them to be propagated as truth for a long time. And then the consequence of that is like, okay, well, knowing that there's a certain rate of people leaking or whistleblowing or fibbing or whatever the case is, if they're a large enough scale, how long do they actually last? And the results are really interesting, but I think it's the idea that, you know, there are so many things that have to go right in order for these kind of really out there theories to propagate the popular imagination.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay. So say that again. We got some technical difficulties here. So the last sentence. Yeah,
so the last sentence was, there are a lot of pieces that have to fall into place.
Yes.
In order for these large, grand scale narratives to take root in popular imagination.
Sure.
And to the degree that, like, not just that people know about them or, like, oh, yeah, that the moon landing was fake, blah, blah, blah. But, like, people actually sincerely believe things that obviously are verifiably false are actually true.
Okay. So, just as someone who's been on a movie set a couple of times, just as an extra and the featured extra and things, I can tell you that, like, let's just go with the moon landing one. Let's just walk through. Now,
let's do it.
Moon landing. I am willing to hear out people that say that the video that we watched as a nation was fake. I am not willing to hear out people that say we didn't go to the moon. Scientifically, the geology and stuff, like, we went to the moon. The thing being faked, that's a little more interesting to me. That makes a little bit more sense. But as someone who's been on a movie set, so let's just say, like, you got to darken the room. Okay, so someone's in charge of the studio in the 60s. Like, that's like four people that know who's shooting that shit. Then someone's got to be on the camera. Like, that means, like, pay him millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in the 60s or shoot him. Possible. Sure. Fine. Then you have to have actors. And the actors, I am one, and I'm not a very successful one. And I've had more success than most, but not very much success compared to the good ones. The people in LA that would have been hired to do this would not have shut up about it ever. Never, never, ever, ever, never. They never would have shut up about it, ever. They would have wanted credit. And then, by the way, all the people that shot it would also want credit. So it would only theoretically work if the people in it were like Steven Spielberg or whoever was direct. Like, Coppola and Brando because they wouldn't need the money and they would just think that they were high or something. I don't know. That's like, it wouldn't work because people, and that's like 20 people, the stage managers, the sound people, the editors, like 20 people, you could, like a student film level project of this. Still, millions and millions of dollars would be needed to keep them quiet. It's not, and that's like 20 people. Some of these conspiracy theories are wild. Like the JFK assassination one, people think there's a lot of smoke there and there's some weirdness and that the people involved, that the CIA were theoretically involved, and it would have to be a situation where, like, I guess they have a code of silence. But like, even that, like 180 people, I follow a former CIA agent on TikTok and he just won't shut up about stuff. And he doesn't give away trade secrets. He's just like, this is how the spy world works. Like, oh, that guy would have to shut up and he loves attention.
Well, and you know, the other thing that you're, the thing that you're not counting here is like, and this is the thing that Grimes did. He said, okay, how many people in total would really have to keep quiet about this? So ostensibly the organization that took us to the moon was NASA. So in addition to all of the people that NASA would have had to employ in order to actually like shoot this scene of like the alleged fake moon landing, at the time in 1965, when that was NASA's peak employment. That was when they had the most people working on it. And this years-long project would have it would have overlapped with most of these people. So for the simplicity's sake, you can say, like, okay, what's the most number of people that worked at NASA who might have had access to this program? The answer is 411,000. There's almost 500,000 people working at NASA. I'm pretty sure the population of Wyoming was like 400,000 at that time.
Yeah.
Maybe. It's like an entire state's worth of people would have to be absolutely silent about this in order for the conspiracy theory to have worked generously. And of course, Grimes has data for all of the other examples too. So we'll go through those here. For the climate change fraud, the basic story there is that people believe that climate change is not real. Yeah. In fact, so the way that the narrative that Grimes is working with in his paper, he says the climate change denial has deep political dimensions. Despite the overwhelming strength of evidence supporting the scientific consensus of anthropogenic global warming, and there is, there are many who reject that consensus. They just say, no, it's not true. Some claim that climate change is a hoax that's propagated by international organizations, environmental activists, scientists, etc. And the goal is to gain money from the green industry. So by propagating this myth, they hope to kind of prop up an entire industry where they can make investments and get all kinds of government grants and all sorts of stuff. So you think, okay, how many people would have to be in on a conspiracy of that size? Grimes went with the assumption that basically everybody who is involved with geological, I guess, research and climatology and all of that, that would basically be NASA again, because they're the ones who are studying that sort of thing. And he also includes the American Geophysical Union. And there are also people who are working at the American Academy for the Advancement of Science, which is an organization that does science, science funding.
And keep in mind here, these scientists, these nerds, and we'll talk about it, I guess, the cancer one is the exact same thing. They make money and they make a name for themselves by discovering things. So all they have to do is prove that they discovered something that, like, they cured cancer. And then all of a sudden you're in a situation where you're like, well, they're policing themselves. They want to make the discovery more than they want the money from the pharmaceutical company. That's what drives them. That's why it didn't take long for the Western civilization to come up with the COVID vaccine, because they're driven by glory and like lifelong fame within their niche, not by this money. So silencing the geologists and the doctors who are hiding cancer cures and stuff would be, it's a preposterous notion. It's a game theory situation. You're assuming that they want like $1 million a year. Like, they don't. They want to be the guy that cured cancer, and way more than they want to be the guy with $1 million a year. If they wanted $1 million a year, and many of them do, they just quit their jobs and they go into tech or they go into Wall Street.
Yeah, well, and some people will also monetize the opposite of consensus, the kind of rebellious anti-consensus that's obviously propagating untruths, and we call those people grifters. Those are people who are lying to a deluded audience and propagating the disinformation, propagating the hoax. So we'll talk about that here in a little bit. But just to continue with Grimes's research here. So the American Geophysical Union, NASA, and AAAS, those are all American organizations, but climate change is a global. It's a global issue. And so if you think of like even just like the Western world, for Grimes's research purposes, he included the number of people in the Royal Society of Fellows who do climate research, mm-hmm. the European Physical Society, which is heavily involved, and then all other published climate scientists, which he estimates at the time of writing this in 2016 was about 29,000 based on the number of individual authors who had published about climatology. And the total from all of those organizations, from the three American organizations that he looked at, and all these different, you know, these European and published, globally published climate scientists, the total number there is, again, about 405,000 people mm-hmm. would have to be quiet about this climate change conspiracy. Vaccination conspiracy is a much smaller scale in this case. But really for the narrative that vaccines are actually dangerous and that people are pushing them for some other kind of ulterior motive, that would involve basically the U.S. government, so the Centers for Disease Control would be the ones there, right. and the World Health Organization, and that totals about 22,000 people who would have to stay silent about the vaccines thing. Yeah. And then finally, for suppressing cancer, that's like if you take, okay, governments and then every pharmaceutical company that has ever worked on any cancer-related research products, any kind of marketing for cancer drugs or treatments, and that's like your Pfizer's, your Merck's, your Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, and there are, I think, 9 here listed, and the total number of people at all of those organizations that would have to stay quiet about having cured cancer is 714,000 people. Dang.
I was going to guess 1.5 million.
That would be a good guess. It's thanks, about man. Half.
Appreciate
that.
It. Yeah, yeah.
So they have to. So just thousands and thousands of people,
hundreds of thousands,
have to stay forever, silent
forever.
Right, right.
And then the new people coming in, like, hey, welcome to Pfizer. You shut the fuck up, or we'll kill you. Like, forever. Like, so it would be 20 million in the period of 5 decades.
Yep,
it'd be crazy.
So that's the challenge that the hoaxes are running up against. Like, somebody is going to come out and tell the truth. Like, hey, this is actually a hoax.
Right,
but. But the real challenge here, Nick, and I think this is such a frustrating thing for people who will look at stuff like the challenges of disinformation and the challenges associated with misinformation, where people like will see these hoaxes and not know any better, mm-hmm. in a low level of science literacy. The challenges are basically twofold. People are working with, on the one hand, people are working with forces that they don't really understand. It's kind of like a good luck charm. Like, all right, that wards off the big, inexplicable, the ethereal, the numinous threat of the bad spirits or whatever that I can't see, that I don't really understand, but I feel like I need protection from. So when you think about, like, large companies like Facebook with information control, or giant pharmaceutical companies with their labyrinthine, you know, legal structures and the armies of lawyers that they have working for them, and the secrecy of their research and the need to keep their trade data private, when you look at government classification programs, the fact that the public can't be allowed to know certain information, like the fact that that's really exists. In essence, what you have is people who are trying to grapple with forces and powers that are so big and so behind the scenes and so inaccessible that they have no way of really understanding their inner workings. And people need a way to deal with that. The other challenge that you have, in addition to trying to grapple with people dealing with forces beyond their control, the other problem is that science by nature should be based on trying to inquire and trying to pressure and trying to criticize and trying to break down and like expose weaknesses and identify inconsistencies. And in fact, in the PBS article, Grimes is quoted here. I guess he emailed back and forth with a journalist, and he said, science thrives on being open and gradually self-correcting and a willingness to be guided by evidence and not dogma.
Yeah.
So That's the problem. And so when you have people who are trying to explain the inexplicable or deal with that which can't be dealt with, and you have like the natural desire and like the need scientifically for people to be inquisitive and questioning and doubtful and critical, then what you have is a perfect recipe for people to come up with explanations that satisfy that need to know and that need to be critical and that need to put purported information through the stress test against trying to figure out a way to personally deal with these large forces beyond control.
Yeah.
And the end result for that is hoaxes and conspiracy theories, which rest on claims that sound true, that involve stuff that is critical thinking. That's like, you know, deduction and basic reasoning and game theory analysis and all that kind of stuff, except that they are both false and unfalsifiable. You can't prove a negative. And so the conspiracy theory or the hoax is allowed to live in its own ecosystem and thrive.
Yeah, so a couple things there. The first, I want to address the vaccine thing because I think it's an interesting jumping off point that not all conspiracies are equal. And for Grimes' his sake, I thought there was a couple of interesting choices in which ones he analyzed there because they're so global and the risk of them is like everyone is screwed. Like they are massive. Those are superhero storylines, like in like global death, right? So those are big ones. True. But like for the vaccine, when we've done a vaccine episode, we know that part of the vaccine problem is that it's too good, but it's not perfect. So at a certain point, you can't cure everyone, and then people start to freak out, and there's like a downward spiral of vaccines. And it makes me think that not all conspiracy theories are made equal, and there have been conspiracy theories, quote unquote, that have turned out to be true. If you want to look at like big companies like tobacco and pharma, if you allege that, hey, I think they're getting us addicted to heroin on purpose, or I think this might actually be bad for us, and we know that it's bad for us, and they want us to get addicted, like, this turned out to be kind of true, that's exactly what was happening, and they were paying government officials, and it was a whole thing. But the ones that aren't provable, and the ones that don't have a ton of smoke, because some things, like, that's not a conspiracy. That's not a conspiracy theory. It's a literal conspiracy. It's an actual crime. It's something that people found it out. Those things get found out. They're often motivated by money, and there's not a second layer to them. It's like, hey, if we give them addictive drugs, they make money. Like, yeah, that's pretty simple. So I want to talk to you about a couple of conspiracy theories, and I want to start with one that I think proves your point of why disinformation is so important. Have you heard about the conspiracy theory of Bohemian Grove?
No.
You've never heard of Bohemian Grove?
Well, I know Bohemian from the hit song sure. Bohemian Rhapsody and the region in Germany, so
sure.
I feel this, like I'm off to a good start there.
This is in Monterio, California. It is the idea is that it's an enormous club that meets and worships a huge wooden owl, and every single important man in Western society has been to an annual or biannual party at Bohemian Grove. They go there. And I'm talking about like Herbert Hoover, the Astorias. It's said that one of the big moments that the Manhattan Project really took shape was at Bohemian Grove. Like Oppenheimer was a big part of it. There are former presidents that have been there. It's this crazy idea.
Herbert Hoover.
Yep. So it's this huge idea that all these guys just like, and men, they just meet there and they just discuss the order of the day. They just get into this club. And the reason, Chris, that this conspiracy theory is so dangerous is that it's fucking true.
So what? They just go hang out at a large owl statue and worship it?
Yeah. Yep.
Why?
If you, I don't know, you're not rich and powerful. We'll never find out.
What's going on there?
So, well, the point of this is that I'm trying to make is that the conspiracy theories that are stupid, like that pizza people are delivering and running a large pedophile network underground, it sounds dumb, but misinformation can make you not believe things that are happening. Like if you just go to the Bohemia Grove site, there's people on camera. Like this is a thing that happens. But the way I just presented it to you, it sounded fake.
Yeah, it sounds completely made up.
Yeah, it isn't.
But then there's also like then there's also stuff that's like, you know, kind of non-bizarre sounding stuff that are examples of other real conspiracy theories that like really actually hurt people. I don't know what's going on with this Bohemian Grove thing. It sounds very like Agenda very 66 true. Or whatever.
Yes.
Sounds like the kind of thing you would hear on Coast to Coast AM.
Yeah, but it's a real thing. I mean, there are pictures of like I think the Clintons or something. There are people. It is a thing. All of the important people they go.
But the Joshua Barajas article from PBS lists a few examples that like, happened pretty recently even.
Yep.
So sure. There was the NSA eavesdropping scandal. The sure. Allegations like, oh yeah, the government's spying on your phones. And you know, if you ask anybody who would make that allegation in like, I don't know, 2012 or whatever, like prove it. And they're like, I can't, but sometimes I hear somebody listening on the other. Like, I don't think that's really how it works. But Edward Snowden blew the whistle on all of that. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's a lot more to that story and I encourage you to take a peek at it. But sure. Turns out that, yeah, there was a real whistleblower who had real insider knowledge, and he really spilled the beans.
Yes.
Then there was the Tuskegee syphilis experiment.
Sure.
About that?
That's why vaccines are not very well received by a portion of our country.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, that's a case where, you know, they experimented on a bunch of black men and infected them with syphilis, and they withheld a cure for the STD. Mm-hmm. And that's like a known thing that the government did that to a bunch of unwitting people. Then, of course, there's another example here. An FBI scandal involving Dr. Frederick Whitehurst, whose misleading forensic test led to wrongful detainment and execution of several innocent people. So these are real kind of conspiracies. They're not, they started out as conspiracy theories. I mean, it turns out that the theory was correct. And so, you know, that adds to the layer of like, well, you know, maybe I'm possibly right. Like in the mind of the conspiracy theorist, in the mind of like the flat earther who believes something that is obviously provably untrue. At every turn, it can deflect and say, well, you know, that's just what they want you to think. That's what they want you to think. And then they can turn to things like the Tuskegee Airmen experiment. Say, well, remember what happened to the Tuskegee men? Well, I remember when people said the government was spying on our phones. And so it makes it that much harder because it's really a double bind of having to like prove that a negative isn't happening. And also to deal with the fact that allegations that seemed baseless and kind of crazy at the time did turn out to be true. So it's a real significant challenge. And, you know, it's shocking that some of these provably false things continue to persist, like the moon landing and you know, flat eartherism. But then there are other conspiracies that are a little bit more sinister, and then there might be more to them.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the deal that really makes me upset, because there are some cheeky ones and fun ones out there that aren't sinister, and those are the ones that I kind of enjoy. But it's weird because when you start denying things that could be scientifically proven, that's where you get into a situation where you're like, man, you know, what is this? Is this a bad moral hazard that we're setting for science? And we always, I think the Flat Earther documentary on Netflix is an important, it's an important cultural accomplishment from journalism, because there's way more going on with flat earthers than just they believe that the earth is flat. I kind of think deep down, none of them do. I think that they're lonely and they're bored, and there's something more to that. And you can see it in the documentary. It's really well done. But there are clips, multiple clips from the documentary, where these people spend quite a bit of money and they draw up very basic, airtight scientific studies. They do them, and they're like, if they literally say into the camera, if the earth is round, this is what will happen. That happens. And they're like, huh, something must be screwed up. It's like that's where it gets weird, because then the next step is like, oh, the Holocaust didn't happen, and slavery didn't happen, and slavery was actually good. But there are some conspiracy theories that can also be fun, like the Fruit of the Loom one. Like, that's a company buying into telling a lie about a logo. That's fun. I like that one.
Yeah, it really is. Well, and you know, another thing that is a key element of conspiracy theory thinking and of hoaxes is the ability to attribute a motive to some unnamed and unknowable organization in a way that, like, oh yeah, well, if this were true, then so and so would benefit from it. Like, well, okay, well, that makes sense. And by playing to like the game theory rationality of, you know, expected payoffs for the players that are allegedly involved, you can justify things that otherwise have no evidence. By you can forget, okay, we'll set aside the scenario that we're examining. We'll stop taking a look at whether XYZ scenario is or isn't true or is or isn't happening. And instead we'll look at the motives behind the people who are allegedly involved. And we'll see, okay, does this person benefit from having this way? Does this organization receive some kind of payoff if this conspiracy is paying out? I was reading a book by C.S. Lewis recently, in which it's called God in the Dock, and mm-hmm. it's a collection of kind of essays and writings and stuff. And there's one that he writes called Bulverism. And
interesting word.
He basically is like, he's kind of bemoaning the modern, you know, at the time he wrote Bulverism in like the 50s or so. And one of the problems that he sees with basically like the contemporary world, and which still persists today, is basically like the propagation of the Marxist idea that everybody is a member of a class, and that all classes are constantly, you know, in conflict with each other. We talk about that kind of implicitly on the show when we talk about, you know, the working class or people unionizing or whatever the case is. And when you pair that with the Freudian development of like, okay, well, people are just bundles of complexes, and then, you know, once you understand like the sex drive and the desire to feel important, then it kind of like explains all of human behavior. So between like the personal, like the individual level and the social level, you get this like layered effect of looking at people's motivations. And so to falsify a claim, Lewis gives some examples like, you know, do you believe that, I think it was like Cleopatra was a bad queen or something. Well, the Freudian will say, well, somebody thinks so-and-so is, or so-and-so thinks Cleopatra is a bad queen because he had a bad relationship with his mom. And the Marxists would say like, well, you know, Cleopatra is a bad queen because she repress the masses, or you know, so-and-so thinks he was a bad queen because he's a member of the working class, and you know, you you look instead of at the scenario, like, you instead of, like, forget the question of whether she was or wasn't, you just explain away, like, you start by assuming that somebody is wrong, and you explain away what their motivations are, what their benefits would be. And that's what people do with conspiracy thinking. It's like, well, you know, the government benefits from classifying information about this because they don't want you to know that they're listening to your conversations. People stand to gain money from the green conspiracy theory, and so that's why they're propagating the climate change thing. NASA wins some big geopolitical advantage for America by making it seem like we get to the moon first, and so that's why they would propagate the moon landing conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
And it's hard to falsify.
So, yeah, and I think that part of the reason that this conversation is coming up now is that it seems like a lot of them are happening more and more frequently, and I think a lot of them are kind of dumb. I mean, COVID conspiracy is going to last forever. That was a pandemic. That makes sense. Like, I would be disappointed in the conspiracy theorists if they didn't make the COVID conspiracy last forever. That, I mean, that's the point. It's a global thing. Like, yeah, call it the plandemic. That's funny. But it seems like there's more of the QAnon stuff, and a bunch of stuff is popping up. This is not unique throughout the throes of history. No. So I'm looking at this paper that was published in 2017, and it's got, I'm trying to get the authors right, two authors, Jan Willem van Pruijen, that is very Dutch, and Karen M. Douglas. So is it Jan Willem van Pruijen? Jan, probably. It's probably Jan. The title of the paper is Conspiracy Theories as a Part of History, the Role of Societal Crisis Situations. And the idea that they looked into is how people feel when they believe conspiracy theories. So they found that there are some basic psychological factors that all big conspiracy theories have. The first is that conspiracy theories are not unique to our current time. The second is that the relationship between societal crisis situations, like the Cuban Missile Crisis and the huge pressure that people were feeling in the 60s, you notice a lot of these conspiracy theories date back to the 60s and 70s, moon landing, JFK, all of that stuff, and we were freaking out. These feelings instigate sense-making processes that increase the likelihood that people perceive conspiracies in their social environment. So they're like, it's a panic. This can't be happening. This can't be happening. What do I do? I am nothing. I am small. Someone's got to be up for this. And a third conclusion that we can draw about the societal pressures is that after being formed, conspiracy theories can become a part of lay representations of history and are transmitted to new generations as coherent narratives, even though people do not experience uncertainty about past crisis situations anymore. So that means that the conclusion was, taken together, these processes might explain why human history is complete with widespread in belief in conspiracy theories. It happens all the time. For example, it is widely and well documented that Romans, in the death of Nero, which was like 7 AD, I believe, 70 AD, they didn't believe he died or killed himself. They believe he faked his death and was like, fuck all y'all, I'm out.
That's a pretty bold hoax. Do you think that's true?
I will say this. Old conspiracy theories are way more believable because they weren't able to communicate with everyone all the time. They were also not trackable, and enough wealth did exist to just murder the people that could talk. So kind of, it's more believable because if you look at the paper we're reading or the article we're reading from is it Grimes from PBS, is like, yeah, I'll think of all these people be silent. Nero could be like, yeah, kill that guy. And then, all right, done.
Yeah, for sure.
That's way more believable.
As any Rome scholar would know, political violence was completely normalized. It had been normalized for 150 years before Nero ever took the throne, starting really with the Gracchi reforms. But in any case, it doesn't take a whole lot to kind of silence people. And so if word gets around, word kind of gets around. And, you know, there's also kind of like, first of all, I should say, like, we're kind of talking loosey-goosey between, you know, the difference between a hoax and a conspiracy theory. But I do think they're kind of sides of a coin, I think, really. So. You know, it's like
a hoax is purposeful, I think, to me. I think it's like I have a hoax for you. We'll talk about it in a minute. But that's how in my brain, the hoax is a purposeful thing that people are screwing with you. And a conspiracy theory, people want it to be true.
Yeah, yeah, I think that is a good distinguishing factor between the two. And so when we talk about, you know, what we're really talking about is like, how do false things become widely believed? So I'm reading another article here by this time by Caitlin Dewey, who is writing in the Washington Post in 2016 about why that Facebook copyright hoax will never ever die.
Oh, so the one of different like, than yeah, a conspiracy copyright theory, your posts. Like, yeah.
Yeah, well, and so I told you the article's from 2016. Mm-hmm. Caitlin writes here that There was a similar post making the rounds kind of in January 2015 and December 2014 and November 2012 and June 2012, basically saying that if you don't post this status, and it's like some big long scree of nonsense, if you don't post this, then Facebook will have the right to everything you post and will have the right to your photos and will have this and that, copyright, blah, 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 blah.
They have
it's pure nonsense. And Nick, it's crazy. There's a person out there that you and I know that posted it today. As we record this, I will not reveal any other information about this person, but I saw this exact thing. It's, and there's even language like at the top. It's like, man, I can't believe I'm still seeing this. And they're different versions of the same thing.
Yeah,
but
no, I've seen it.
Like,
there used to be chain text. Send this to your 10 favorite people and or you'll die tomorrow or something.
Right, exactly. But, but this one even includes like kind of preemptive language. It's like, they say it's not, this isn't anything, but it will, you know, it can't hurt. And so it's absolute nonsense. And so Dewey is kind of explaining like, well, you know, it's kind of harmless, but how does this really happen? And she writes, she explains like, you know, you're trying to deal with the fear of things that you don't really understand. With conspiracy theories, I think the crisis environment that you're talking about from the Dutch author there,
I think,
right. So that's a big, scary, uncontrollable thing where people can't help but be confronted by the reality of like the Cuban Missile Crisis or something similar. And they try to figure out a way to deal with it. And when it comes to hoaxes, it's like, okay, you know, it's obviously not a crisis, so there's not the same level of urgency. But this is still something large. Copyright law is complex. Facebook is a large, kind of opaque organization.
Yeah.
There's, you know, the concept of, at the time, you know, this is a very 2016 article. It's like the looming specter of big data and disappearing privacy. Well, now it's like, okay, data is kind of ubiquitously stolen or, you know, reaped or, you know, signed away and sold and whatever else. Yep. So we're kind of, you know, the genie's out of the bottle there. But the point is that people kind of want like some sort of protective totem against these mysterious forces that they don't know how else to keep at bay. And so they propagate kind of little hoaxes like this. And it's just, you know, and you know, I guess I should also say it's not necessarily that this is the case for all hoaxes, like the Bigfoot hoax. Like there's that grainy footage of a guy walking around in a suit and people are like, oh my God, that's Bigfoot. Like, okay, that's a different kind of hoax. That's somebody who's just kind of having a go, but people don't know any better. I propagate that information.
Yeah,
think,
I've got a couple. I've got a couple for you. So there's one that's really dangerous and really, really, really scary. And this is something that was reported on in 2020 that I think kind of it's sort of like the Michigan sexual assault thing at the University of Michigan Athletic Department that no one remembered or reported on. It just happened amongst a bunch of crazy stuff that was happening in 2020. We didn't have time. So this is from the Financial Times. The Financial Times did some, I would say, base level investigative journalism where they were looking at the QAnon conspiracy theory. Which is about that Donald Trump was fighting a secret war against pedophiles and like the pizza delivery people were involved and whatnot. And the Financial Times people were kind of like, this feels like there are people who are geniuses at the internet who are stoking the fires because they're bored in their basements, you know, and they're fucking with people that are idiots and want to believe or sad or lonely and scared and want to believe conspiracy theories. So they posted this. This is the direct passage from the piece. A couple of months ago, we asked if QAnon, the online conspiracy theory that claims Trump is saving the world, is actually a LARP, which is a live-action role-playing game. And they were contacted by people in incredibly sophisticated ways that were like, yep, totally is. And then they were contacted by someone with ties to the government. And this is on the Financial Times. These are like, there are about 20 journalism brands where I'm like, that's real journalism. These are people, these are nerds. These are nerd journalists.
Yeah, that's the real deal.
Yeah, like most people that read the Financial Times read it in their hands. Like, this is old school stuff. They were contacted by people who know people in the government that were like, some governments are involved in this, and what they're doing is an old school thing. The Cleveland Browns did this when they leaked that they were going to hire Condoleezza Rice. They were putting out misinformation hither and thither to see where the leaks were about misinformation. But then Financial Times reported that some people just caught on to what was going on in their mom's basement. And they're like, shit, we can say anything we want. And these people will stoke the fires. Like, that's a hoax. And these people are watching the conspiracy believers dance, and it's just give them troll level enjoyment. But That's where this can get really dangerous. And that's the Financial Times reported this. They're like, this is what we found. We can't verify any of it. This is what people told us. It seems like it's a whole rabbit hole. There are many YouTube videos on this now. And again, it's one of those things. It's like a conspiracy theory of a conspiracy theory. But I do have some fun conspiracy theories for you. So one of the greatest TikTok prompts was this guy. He does really great TikTok prompts. And one of his prompts years ago during the pandemic was, what's a conspiracy theory that you 1,000% believe in? And I have one for you, that O.J. Simpson's son murdered Nicole Brown. Despite the DNA, his DNA would be similar. They weren't sophisticated enough to analyze it at the time. The glove would have fit him. O.J. would have covered the Broncos' slow chases to help his son get away. Like, there's some good old-fashioned conjecture there. Not bad. I don't like that at all. And there are a bunch of other ones. So Yahoo compiled them all, and I have my favorite one here. This is not a conspiracy. This is a hoax. It's called Conspiracy 58. Many hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people believed this for a long, long time. Conspiracy 58 is that the World Cup, which happened in Sweden in 1958, never happened. And that the United States
never, Central... Just didn't happen.
The United States Central Intelligence... Because things were popping off. Soviet Union, 58, that's the beginning of space races. Some scary stuff. That the CIA went to Sweden and they filmed a couple of things because it was... Live broadcast from Sweden to the United States wasn't really happening back then. You would listen to games on the radio, even the United Kingdom to Sweden. Like, Sweden's like kind of a Germany and Russia. Like, it's not broadcast. You can't just flip on the TV and watch or listen to anything that you wanted back then. So the idea is that the CIA faked it. They faked the World Cup in 1958. Nobody knows. And they're like, there's a whole movie about it. It's called Conspiracy 58. Conspiracy 58, in the credits, in Swedish, said, this is a work of fiction at the very end. That had no impact on anything. It had no impact.
Because nobody could read Swedish.
Millions of people believed it for a long time. And they're like, in the movie, they're like, this is fake. It was fun.
That's like
But then the conspiracy theorists can then, like, as you mentioned earlier, like, conspiracy theorists like, oh, they had to put that in there. And then now you're in the spiral.
That's what they want you to think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, exactly.
That's kind of like when you, remember when we found that kind of documentary about like mer people.
Yeah.
The aquatic ape theory.
Yeah. I do like
it. So it's on Discovery Channel.
Ooh, I like it a lot.
Yeah. Of course you'd like aquatic ape theory because that compelling, well done mockumentary made you think like, oh yeah, somewhere. And you can go back like, oh yeah, somewhere off the coast of Africa, somebody was hunting dolphins or something. And then they gradually started swimming more and they developed and there's mer people. Blah, blah. Guys, it's a plausible explanation. Like that's the thing that unifies conspiracy theories and hoaxes, is like there's a plausible explanation that makes sense even in the absence of evidence. And oh, by the way, there's no way for you to gain evidence because the odds are, unless you're in a very small group of very select people, you're not an evolutionary biologist with intimate knowledge of the coast of Africa and the prehistoric migration patterns of the great apes therein. So like you couldn't falsify this information because you don't know, and nobody you know knows. So you can just say like, wow, well, it makes a lot of sense. And that's how the conspiracy theories work. They feel like critical thinking. They're based on no evidence, but they're based on claims that sound compelling and can't be negated. There's no way you can go back and say like, yeah, I have proof. Like, I have the CIA recordings that say we're going to fake the 1958 World Cup because things are popping off. Like, you couldn't find those things.
Yep.
So there's like a built-in little ecosystem where conditions are just right that this claim can kind of survive. Even though people are saying it's not true, it's like, well, you know, but what if it was?
Yeah.
So just to bring us back to full circle here, unless you have other conspiracy theories that you want.
No, I was going to list some of my favorite ones. We'll do that at the end. I have some other.
We'll do that at the end because I got my favorites too.
Yeah.
But just to bring us full circle on the original article, so we'll talk a little bit about the results of one of the questions that Grimes asked, which was how long do these conspiracy theories survive? How long do these hoaxes last? And remember, we're talking in some cases 400,000 people. 20,000 people, 700,000 people would have to stay absolutely silent on this. And so when you parameterize like, okay, what's the percent chance that somebody's going to leak this? Grimes said he was being very conservative, as in like everybody's a really, really good secret keeper for all this stuff. And even with those parameters, he estimated that the climate change hoax with 405,000 people ballpark involved, that hoax would have naturally been exposed after 3.7 years. And the vaccination conspiracy with its need for tens of thousands of people at the World Health Organization and the CDC. According to Grimes' formula, that hoax would have been exposed after about 3.15 years. In the case of the cancer cover-up, with all those hundreds of thousands of people, that hoax would have been revealed in about 3.17 years. And it's shocking that, you know, that people can still continue to believe this. And if it were true, then people would have uncovered this a long time ago. And they haven't. And it just, it hasn't been. So either everybody is a perfect secret keeper, or much more likely, it's just not true. It just isn't the real thing. And so I think it's a real challenge to try to deal with that kind of information, because, like, I bet you we're approaching the audience size now where I bet you somebody out there believes one of these hoaxes and is going to write into the show. And they're going to say something like, well, yes, you guys are really compelling. And player one, you sound really, really interesting. And I think I just admire you a lot. And Nick is not as good, but I still trust him. But you guys are wrong.
Which I appreciate. I appreciate. And there, and the thing about these conspiracy theories,
I know somebody's going to do that.
Yeah, I know it's going to happen. But there, and the thing that bums me out is that there is weird stuff happening. Like, do you know about Felicity, California?
Oh,
it's
no.
Like the it's like, worship, the, like some another yes, it's like a war. Yes, and like the Rothschilds and stuff, they own it. It's like right outside of Yuma, Arizona. It's like this, this perfect intersection of like roads and lunar stuff. It's right in the middle, and like you have to say an oath to go inside. Like, you can't tour it. It's like this weird little mini temple. Like, there's weird stuff happening, and it's open and it's out there. And it's not, you don't have to conspiracy. Just stop being lazy and get on the internet. Wait till you have a couple whiskeys with me and I talk to you about Norilsk, Russia. Then we can have some conversations about some cool stuff.
I have some news for you. We must have had a few too many whiskeys, because we have done Norilsk. We have watched the documentary.
I know you and I have. I'm talking to player three. Yes. Just look into the copper and then the nickel mines in Norilsk. That's not a conspiracy theory. It's just crazy. Okay, so all of these people would have had to have been silenced. And like I said, it bums me out because there are real things that are being discovered. Science is a moving target. Like, for example, when I don't listen to Joe Rogan, I consume some of his content on TikTok because I was an early adopter of Joe Rogan many thousands of episodes ago. But I haven't listened in many years.
It's not too late to get off that train.
I have. I went long off the train. It's been thousands of episodes since I've listened. But what bums me out about, and he's the perfect example of this, we're like on one guest, we'll just dive into bullshit and they'll just like spew it as if it's a fact. And then another guest will come on and be like, yeah, he's quoting scientists. Here are the things. Things are happening. And like, for example, with carbon dating and some research going on in Egypt and Turkey, like the timeline of human history is changing. We don't know the pyramids and Göbekli Tepe and all of this. Like, we know, we don't know what we don't know. And like the way that deforestation is happening in the Amazon, all of these El Dorado, these huge settlements are being discovered with whatever radar technology planes have. Like, there's really cool stuff happening. And those are not conspiracy theories. Like, the idea that a Spanish settler goes through the Amazon, spreads smallpox and influenza, sees this utopia of the Amazon rainforest that they had set up to be a garden of medicine and food and like where they lived their life. Humans do that. Gave them all this disease, came back, and he couldn't find any of it because the forest took over after millions of people died. It's not a conspiracy theory. That's a theory. That's a hypothesis. That makes sense, right? So like that's what bums me out. And then the next episode, Joe Rogan could be like, yeah, and he put this stuff on his wound and it cured it. It's like, well, that's antibiotics, dude. It doesn't have to make it sound like Big Pharma's hiding it. I have been to New York City. I've been to Boston. The skyscrapers come from money. They're interested in money. They'll just take it. So yes. Like, that's what it's annoying to me. It's like, because there's real science happening. There's real weirdness. There's real science. You don't have to be a conspiracy theorist. Just get on the internet and look it up.
Yeah, and that's a real problem with like science literacy just kind of being low or on decline. Well, you know, it's one thing to have critical thinking skills, and it's one thing to have curiosity about stuff that you don't know. And it's another thing to be willing to accept stuff that's just not really true, but kind of sounds like it is. And, you know, the overconfidence in the ability to identify real versus fake kind of like unknown stories or discoveries or science, like that's a real problem. And that feeds conspiracy thinking, and that feeds hoaxes.
Sure. Okay. So we're in a period of heavy conspiracy traffic right now. It will go away. Remember, boring is hot. Let's get into some of our favorites. I told you about Conspiracy 58. That's a really good one. Hit me with some of yours.
There's a conspiracy out there on the internet that I think is one of the joke. It's more like a jokes rather than a hoax. Okay. But the conspiracy is that Wyoming doesn't exist.
Wyoming's not the
there's
only
no,
one.
There's no such thing as the state of Wyoming. That is actually how I met my fiance.
Oh, yeah, because Wyoming is real. Yeah. We could work. We're government plants. I could tell you my salary is not high enough to shut my mouth on that. It just isn't.
No, they couldn't pay me enough money to live in Washington, D.C.
You know, Wyoming's not the only one. A lot of Americans say that as like, you're like, it's exactly right. A joke's not a hoax. A lot of people out there have similar thoughts about Finland.
Yeah, it's not. Not really.
It's fake.
Really
it's just nothingness. It's nothingness. All those people are just paid off Russians and Swedes acting.
Another favorite is the Denver International Airport is the headquarters of the New World Order.
Once that's
they
a great one.
Enact, I think it's like Agenda. Is it Agenda 66? Or no, that's Order 66. That's Star Order 66. Wars. It's like Agenda 48 or something. I don't know. I heard it one time talking to a dude in the processing lab at FMC Tronamine, now known as Genesis Alkali. Some old guy was like, yeah, once they enact that, it's going to be the new world government and we're all going to be repressed or whatever. And it's going to be headquartered out of the Denver International Airport.
It's because it's shaped like a swastika from the air.
Vaguely, it kind of looks almost like a sort of swastika or something. I don't know. But there are some really interesting things like cryptic murals that are very creepy, show like children dying and forests on fire and the overthrow of repressive government. Very strange. There's also a bunch of different contractors that were used for different segments of the airport. So nobody really has the whole blueprint for the whole thing. There's also allegedly data about like how much storage space there is in the underbelly of the airport. There's tunnels that go down 7 or 8 stories allegedly. And nobody really knows what that's for. Like an airport with its size and volume of traffic, like it doesn't need that much storage and that much food and that much fuel. So what are they stocking up for? That's what people are asking. Oh, and the horse statue outside is creepy and did kill the guy that installed it. The head fell off and crushed him.
That's gross. That's tough. That bums me out. How about so many, I love these conspiracy theories. Give me.
Have you heard the one about North Korea? North Korea conspiracy.
That North Korea is a paradise, and all of this is just propaganda against North Korea, and their form of government is the best.
Yeah. So there's a conspiracy theory that North Korea is the perfect human paradise. And it's so isolated from the rest of the world because it is protected by its own like superior society. Communism really works. And there's a conspiracy by Western governments to get you to think that it doesn't work so that their capitalist cronies and private industry can continue to make money off of capitalism. And it's the rest of us that are deluded and kept in the dark.
I have one more for you, and I have deep dive this one, and I'll be frank with you. Probably garbage, but there are also some people that have tenure, we think, on Reddit, that maybe their Reddits have been exposed, and they're like, I don't know. And that is that Charlemagne's son, Carlo Minor, I think is what his name was, just decided one day that, and this has to do with like the Arabic calendar and other fights with like what was then China and Queen Irene, that he just like decided that it's not 802 anymore. It's actually the year 1100, and he just wound the clock. And the Middle Ages never happened.
All-time baller move. Dudes rock.
Just guys being dudes. I have theorized about doing that in pretty much every class I took in college. Just going up there and winding it like, oh, wow, it's done. We made it.
It's crazy, like that episode of The Office.
Who'd have thought we'd be here? Not me.
Not me.
Not me.